morning. Welcome to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and this week our topic is orchids. There are between 22,000 and 26,000 species of orchids, and the reason that we don't know exactly the number is because there's a lot of miscalculations. It's considered one of the largest families of plants. There are over 880 genera. There are twice as many species of orchids as there are birds. There are four times as many species as mammals. They encompass 6 to 11% of all seed plants, and they're found on every continent except in glaciers. And there are even species found in near the Arctic. They're found in Patagonia, and they're most concentrated in the tropics. And there are native orchids throughout the Lower Columbia region. They're found in everything from wetlands to the woods, and they look like everything. They smell beautiful or not, and they have big, beautiful flowers or small, teeny flowers. Vanilla is from an orchid. And my guests today are co-founder of the Sunset Empire Orchid Society, Lori Durheim, and also very, very early participant driving force in the Sunset Empire Orchid Society, Casey Heckenberg. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us on the show.
You guys have been involved with orchids way longer than I have. And how did you got interested before they were mass available, mass, you know, cloned and 5,000 the same, you know, pink and white Phalaenopsis everywhere.
I've been growing for about 27 years before they were in the grocery stores.
Uh-huh.
And my first one I got from a orchid nursery way out in Troutdale. It was a Miltonia, a huge thing. The Miltonias are a little difficult to grow, and I couldn't get it to flower, so I ended up giving it to Dr. Banhauser, who got it to flower, but it wasn't for a beginner.
I've killed every Miltonia I've ever had. Yeah, I don't have any now. And so was that the beginning?
That was the beginning.
Wow.
But the first book I got from Rite Aid that used to be at Young's Bay Center, said you can grow orchids if you can grow African violets. And I had killed every African violet, but I've been growing orchids for almost 30 years, and mostly they've survived.
Uh-huh. And how about you, Casey?
I bought my first orchid. It was a dendrobium in the Hilo Airport, Hilo, Hawaii, and brought it home, figured it would die. A year later, it flowered again, so that was it. I started collecting.
So that, you know, I think I had a similar experience. Somebody gave me, my brother used to hybridize orchids, and he worked in my cousin's orchid nursery, Orchids of Los Osos. And in Los Osos, California. And he brought orchids, my God, to my mother's funeral and gave everyone orchids. But he left them in the car, and it was a over 100-degree day that day, and they all died. So he sent us all more orchids. And I think that was the beginning, that the challenge of, let's try to keep these things alive. We didn't, but... Well, I don't know. My daughter's pretty good at it. I'm not that great at it. So over these years, there's a lot has happened. A lot of advances in reproduction of orchids. They've gone from very expensive, rare, to pretty inexpensive and very common.
From meristemming or... hybridizing, and they can get a very similar to the original cross. Some orchids, however, cannot be miracloned, and one of them is Pathopodilium, and you have to
The old-fashioned way.
The old-fashioned way with the a little growth and repot it. And they can be very expensive depending on the family line.
Right. I've killed those two. I think I do have two that I've kept, mostly because they were in my daughter's room all this time. So, do you have a favorite either group of a kind of orchid or?
I grow mostly species from all over Mexico, South America, Central America, Taiwan, Japan, Philippines, etc.
Okay, now species are ones that are not crosses. Species are ones you would not find in a grocery store or a department store.
Correct.
They're more expensive. They're more rare. So a species is something grown from a seed.
Correct. Or a plantlet.
Okay.
And now most countries will not let their orchids out. You can't go digging up like in the turn of the century, 1800s, where they just ravaged the countryside in these countries and took all the orchids for rich people. And now they're grown here in the United States or in England. They're not being taken out of the countryside. Mm-hmm.
Right, it's harder to get plants. I know that we go through greater gyrations getting plants. So what about there's that equigenics?
Equigenera,
yeah. So we get plants, they're in South America, right?
Correct, and they have an import license, and also even most of these countries allow seed propagation. They just don't allow the plants to be taken out of the wild.
Okay. So, I mean, in some way, that's an opportunity for people, the natives of whatever that country is, to have a business of exporting orchids, which is a huge business in a lot of the world. I mean, we think people are nuts for orchids in America, but in Europe, people have been gaga for orchids for much longer.
Yeah, there's still some pretty export and import processes that, you know, you almost can't buy orchids from Australia here. Other countries have a better trade thing going with the United States. Thailand, for instance, ships thousands of orchids in probably every day because they're big meristem producers, and that's where the ones from Trader Joe's and places like that, the big white Phalaenopsis.
Uh-huh. So let's talk about what meristem cloning is. It's an interesting process that used to be, when it started, it was a complete, almost like 90% failure. And now they've gotten it down to, they've got good sterile technique, and they've developed this whole vibration thing to make it like 90% or more successful.
You can buy a kit and do it at home now off the internet.
Cool.
But yeah, they just take a leaf and they put it in a liquid that separates the cells from the structure of the leaf, and then with growth hormones, the cells a lot of them will start to grow, and then they spread those out into a plant auger. Put it in a flask under usually artificial light.
Warm, really warm space.
Yep, just a basic auger, and they grow.
Well, I think once they have it in the, let's see. I remember watching this at my brother's lab at Los Osos. They first had the macerated plant stuff in a flask on a vibration plate and on heat and light with all the whatever the nutrients, growth hormone, and it would vibrate it until there would be enough of it. And then they would put it in something bigger and let roots and stems start to develop, then separate it out into individual plants. And you'd, from that one gook, you could get 1,000 plants, and they're genetically identical. because they're all from the same plant, so no variability. There's potential problems with that. If you got a disease, the whole group gets the disease, right?
Not necessarily. Virus, perhaps, but insects, scale, things like that, mealybugs, it wouldn't be. But if it inherently has a virus, which kills orchids, there's not a cure for it. And can, from one insect to the other, to another plant, you know, spread it.
Mm-hmm.
That could happen. But now, the problem with having them in every grocery store, and we have them at Fred Meyer's, Freddy's, Costco, Safeway, is that people buy them, and they're reasonable price, $14 to $20 for one that's blooming and maybe multiple stems, but they do not know how to grow it. And when it stops blooming, even if it's 2 or 3 months, which a lot of orchids bloom for a very long time, they don't know what to do with it. And a lot of people just throw it away instead of coming to the local meeting like we have.
Right. Well, sometimes some of those, they're packed in moss, and when it's done blooming and you take it out of there and you take a look, there are no living roots. There's nothing. There's nothing in there. And it's just a matter of time before the whole thing just dies.
What happens is that some of the growers were force-feed them high nutrients and everything, exactly the right elements, which we, even in the greenhouse, can't, you know, do. And so they're, like, pumped up on steroids. Mm-hmm. So when you get them home, you don't know how to grow them. You can enjoy them while they're blooming, but after that, they go downhill.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about a Phalaenopsis is considered an easy orchid. I don't find it easy still. So give just a little primer on how do you keep a Phalaenopsis alive and maybe even to bloom again.
Don't overwater it. Make sure, pick up the pot, make sure it's light before you give it more water.
Okay, and on a general amount of time, is that a week? I mean, now we're in a pretty dry, warm time of the year, a week?
Depends on what time of the year. If you've got real dry weather in the summer, around here we're pretty lucky in that our humidity is real high and we can use tap water. A lot of parts of the country, tap water won't work for orchids because the turbidity is too high, and you need, around here in Astoria, we're about 18 parts per million on our turbidity. So we can add fertilizer, and out in Lewis and Clark it's a little bit better because they have an osmosis filter, but rainwater is, of course, probably the best you can give. But if you pick up the pot and it's light, it probably needs water. Miracle-Gro at about half strength seems to be real good Phalaenopsis fertilizer.
Okay, so like for every time you water, every time it gets, basically when it gets, the pot gets light, it means it's dry. A little half strength of that kind of whatever it is, concentrated fertilizer.
I don't fertilize as often. Some orchids need it, like Cymbidiums, a lot.
But we're talking about Phalaenopsis right now.
Phalaenopsis, about once or twice a month.
Okay, so
for me,
variability, and what about, like, where do you put it? I know one of the early mistakes I made was I had it in the shower. That was a bit too wet. Oh, and then a couple times it fell in the shower. That was the end of it. It was just way too wet. Right, that's too much humidity for Phalaenopsis.
It could be if you're having, you know, some issues with, you know, stuff growing, funguses and whatnot in the pot. If it's planted in fir bark, it can handle a whole lot of humidity.
Uh-huh. Okay, so when people buy them, they're generally in
moss
and not much else.
And sometimes if you dig down in the moss, or often, you'll find a little tiny peat pot that it was in originally. And these growers, they're just going bigger, bigger pot, and then they're selling it. So when you go to repot, you have to clean out those two or three different layers of repotting and then put it in whatever you're going to grow in.
Right.
And for some reason, the ones in the store, the moss is very, very green. And after I get it home, it doesn't stay green like it did at the grocery store. Why, I don't know. I have other moss that I use that is brownish, even when it's wet, and it's not that brilliant green, and I've never figured out how they get it to be vibrantly green and beautiful.
That sounds like paint to me.
Yeah.
And because if you water it and it goes away, the paint's going out. Let's take a break. When we talk more, we will we'll talk about where you can buy orchids that are guaranteed to be awesome, and where you can learn about how to be successful growing orchids. And if you have a question, give us a call at 503-325-0010. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. We'll be right back. We're back. Even though it doesn't sound like it, you're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Lori Durheim and Casey Heckenberg, longtime orchid growers and Sunset Empire Orchid Society members. So, okay, we just talked about how to keep a phalaenopsis alive and to have it rebloom. Oh, you know, we should talk about, there's this long stem and the flowers eventually fall off. There's a debate. Cut or don't cut?
What happens with some orchids, especially a phalaenopsis, they will rebloom out of a section on the stem, the flower stem, after the last flower. If the plant seems to be doing well, you know, the leaves are firm, they look all right, it looks healthy, you can let it bloom again. But eventually you're going to have, if it keeps blooming and blooming, you will have to bite the bullet and cut the flower stem to let the body, the leaves and the body of the plant to put out new growth. New leaves and things.
Okay.
There's one thing I'd like to mention, that is phalaenopsis, kind of like about 70% shade, so only about 30% sunlight for them. I was given, or someone brought me an orchid the other day that on that hot day last week, they put it outside to enjoy the sun, and it's well done.
So brown leaves, dead?
Well, those leaves are toast, and I'm going to see if I can't bring it back to life, but it's got a pretty difficult, and it was packed in moss. It was from Costco's originally, and as it started to look sick, why, they gave it more and more water, so the roots were all mushy, and then they put it outside to give it a little bit of sunlight on that hot day. And,
okay, so now that brings up a good point. Orchids can be outside in the good time of the year, or there are some kinds that you could actually leave out most of the year. And if you go to other parts of the country where it's warm, they're growing outside all year round.
Like at my father's house in Los Angeles, he has cymbidiums, which I personally have not been able to bloom because I grow in the house. But there are some that like it very much. You have to read about which ones. Some Cattleyas, you mostly don't want any of them directly in the sun. You want partial shade. One thing, when you bring them back before the inside before the first frost, you're going to have to search for insects, bugs, and problems that it got being outside, slugs, and treat it before you bring it back in.
That's a good point. They are susceptible to the same kinds of insect problems, scale and mealybug, you know, that other plants are susceptible to. I noticed my evergreen clematis is covered with scale. I'd never seen that before.
It's like, been a really bad year.
And there are thousands of leaves on that thing. It's a huge vine covering like the whole cover of my... I can't treat that.
Yes, use a systemic and spray it. A good systemic and Bayer makes a really good systemic actually a fertilizer and a pesticide. And just put it on your clematis and it does amazing things.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds like what we'll need to do. So if for people that want to know more about how to be successful with orchids and also to get orchids, every month there is a meeting of the Sunset Empire Orchid Society, and it's mostly the second Sunday of the month, and there's one coming up the next Sunday, the 12th. It's at 2 p.m. It's at the First Lutheran Church, which is on 33rd between Grand and Harrison, and this week or this month a show judge is coming, and he's got a slideshow showing in an orchid show what the judges are looking for. So there'll be pictures of gorgeous orchids, and he'll probably have some good comparisons of here's a really lousy one, here's the same, you know, the same plant that we awarded, and explaining the differences. I think it'll be fascinating. There'll also be plants for sale. There'll be plants for raffle. It's a great way to get inexpensive plants and learn how to keep your plants alive. It's a cool.
We also have show and tell. The members bring their blooming plants and say a few words about each one, which is a nice part of the meeting.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a lot of fun, and I've learned a ton and gone through a lot of permutations. Now, we've basically talked about one kind of orchid, which is the most common that people can buy easily and inexpensively. But there are tons of other ones. I mean, you have all these species. How many different plants do you have at home?
75.
How about you, Casey? Oh, God, you've got thousands. I've been in your greenhouse.
I don't think it's in the thousands, but okay. Just for varieties, you know, maybe 40 or 50. And then, you know, sub-varieties, I have, you know, of course, more. But
yeah, lots and lots. And the people that come to the meetings, a lot of them have hundreds or more than 50 orchids. A lot of people in the society have greenhouses. A lot of them didn't have greenhouses and over the years have gotten greenhouses. I now have a greenhouse, although it's not nearly like Casey's. It's pretty much a glass room with a heater in it and an up and down, you know, for air circulation and opening the door for cooling it off. It's pretty primitive compared to your high-tech one. But
I've always grown in the house. I have my orchids facing south and east, depending what they are. And most of my orchids are on mounts, like tree fern fiber, any hardwoods, because in the wild, most orchids grow on trees. They're not... they're not taking anything from the trees. They're not parasitic, but they enjoy, you know, being with their roots. They're hooked onto the trees, and they get the water that comes down from the top of the forest onto them and the leaf litter. And there are some that are terrestrials that grow in the ground, but most are live in trees or bushes.
So that's one thing, that if people get a new orchid that they don't know, it'd be good to read about. How does this plant live in nature? What is it like there? Is one of the things, when you buy a mount, it's dry. You got to water it a lot. Okay, how much is too much? Can you overwater a mounted plant?
The mount usually will have some moss on it. I put moss on. I put the plant next to the actual wood, and then the moss over that, so the roots will adhere to the mount itself. That is one disadvantage, that you do have to water more often. But the big advantage is you don't have to repot. If it overgrows the mount, you can just tie on with either yarn or fishing wire, a bigger size one, without removing the plant. And it takes less space. Mm-hmm. But you do have to water them more.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's a big event coming up. It's in a while, but I still think we should mention it. October 6th and 7th is the annual orchid show and sale, and it's at Broadway School. No, it's not. It's at the Bob Chisholm Community Center. Sorry about that. In Seaside. And the sales start at noon on Saturday and goes until 5, and the show starts at 1, or whenever the judges are done doing their thing, and goes until 5, and then Sunday the show goes from 10 to 4. And let's talk about the difference between the show and the sale.
Well, the show, people, exhibitors come from all over.
It's an opportunity to see a variety of plants, lots mounted, some in pots, all blooming, from huge to small, to smelly to absolutely fragrant, right?
They're judged against one another in species and in groups, and there's a good opportunity to get an idea of what you might want to look at in the future. And, of course, nowadays with the World Wide Web, you can look at an orchid and say, boy, I'd like to have one of those. You can go home and see what kind of growing conditions it takes. And
see if you can provide it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a good possibility. Some of the growers will have something in the show that they also have on a sales table. So there's that.
Right, so you could see it and then go buy one. Probably not quite as big and amazing as the one that's for sale, but sometimes, that's in the show, but sometimes there is. And there are frequently gorgeous blooming plants for sale at the sale. And in the sales area, plants are relatively inexpensive.
That's right. And it's hard to resist buying a few more.
But yes, there's sort of a friendly competition among members of the society to who has the most boxes of orchids to take.
That's right. But an important thing is to do some studying. The first 2 or 3 years, I studied a lot. I read a lot of books. And now that we have the computer, you can look things up. And remember that the people that sell them in the orchid magazines and in the catalogs are the professionals, and yours will probably not look quite as wonderful as that, but accept what you get, because they're beautiful whether you have 2 on a stem or 20 on a stem.
That is true. So thank you both for coming. Next week it is To Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine.